Welcome to another exciting episode of SFP Now. I'm your host, Ian M. Cummin, and joining me, as always, to go over the news is our good friend, Raisa. The interview in tonight's programme is with Anik Sparnovic, who is best known for various guest roles in shows such as Continuum and iZombie. And he's going to be talking about those, as well as a film that he's just recently done called Numb. So we'll bring in near that later on. Before we go to the news, I'd like to sort of like make mention of a good friend from the old Blog Talk Radio days. Our good friend Sean Daney, who used to do the TV talk segment on Blog Talk Radio, and he was also instrumental in the campaign to save Jericho, as in it was him that launched the Nuts campaign. He sadly passed away last Thursday from what I can gather, it was a brain aneurysm. Sean, wherever you are, rest in peace, dude. And, you know, with that, you know, Sean, he wasn't really known for being sentimental, but he was a great guy. And he probably wanted us to get straight on with the TV news and do some TV talk. So, I think the first story we'll mention, it was it hit big at the beginning of the week, and no, Sean would be excited about this. Is they're making a new Star Trek series?
Yes, I kind of have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, it's a new Star Trek series, which on paper is awesome. On the other hand, it's being done by the same people in charge of the films, the current films.
Because Alex Kurtzman was fired from the film.
He was fired.
Well, he was kind of let go from the films, so he's not got any further involvement with the films. I think might have happened is might have said we want you to do the TV things because he's got several successful TV series on the go at the moment. So they might have sort of like let him go to specifically do this, but the rumor was he was fired from the films. No one quite knows what's true and what isn't, though. But he was supposed to let go.
The reason I bring it up is because I'm not particularly fond of the notion of adapting the current films for television. I would rather it was a show set in the original timeline.
Well, it's not going to be. It says in the press release it's not going to have anything to do with the movie at all.
Awesome, thank you.
You know,
that's going to save it.
So whether that means it's going to have nothing to do with the what's that? You on fire?
Oh, that's just the alarm on the stairs. We're having elevator trouble.
All right. I thought someone had set you on fire.
No.
As I was saying, it's said in press release that it's nothing to do with the film.
Right.
But that doesn't mean to say that it's not going to be in the same timeline as the film, per se.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of hoping that they go with the prime Star Trek timeline and just continue on from Next Generation and all that.
Yeah, the other problem I have is that after the first episode, they're going to make you pay for it on their online service, which, I mean, I'll do, but it better be brilliant if I'm going to actually be ponying up money for this.
Yeah, well, I don't actually have that problem. I've got a feeling either one or two things will happen here in the UK. Either Sky One will get it, which if that happens, then fine, happy days, they'll get Sky, or it'll end up on Netflix. And I think with them having a partnership with Netflix, CBS, they've got a well-known partnership with Netflix, it might end up on Netflix.
Cool, and you'll be good. I'll have to pony up money, for which I really hope this is actually a good show.
Well, I don't mind paying for it by the episode if it's a good show. God knows when Star Trek The Next Generation came out here, it came out on home video here in the UK before it even before it even hit TV.
And, oh, wow. Okay.
You know, I'd actually seen the first three or four episodes here in the UK before it got picked up by a TV channel.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, so... and then when it got picked up by a TV channel, I just stopped buying it because I didn't need to buy it anymore. In fact, I didn't even buy it. I just rented them.
Yeah.
You know, so, because they were available on video rental, and that's how long ago, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe it's been, what, 30 years since Next Generation?
Yeah. Almost. Isn't that insane?
You know, it's just crazy. Another bit of news I'd like to quickly talk about, but I'll let you briefly talk about Lucifer first, because I know that you're dying to.
This is tangentially related and important for UK viewers. Lucifer has been picked up by Amazon Prime in the UK. So those of you in the UK who want to see Lucifer can see it legally.
Okay, so when's it airing? Is it on there now?
It's gonna start here in the US in January of 2016. So it'll be available around that time for you guys as well.
Mm. You know, that's actually pretty cool. I mean, it's weird as well because Constantine. I'm not sure if Amazon Prime is probably the kiss of death for new American TV shows, because Constantine premiered on Amazon. It didn't get picked up by any of our cable networks. It just went straight to Amazon. So, you know, I'm not, you know, this will be a test to find out whether Amazon Prime is a kiss of death for new American TV shows. You know, it'd be cool either way. Anyway, I was just going to go on to some Doctor Who related stuff. There's been an article in the Daily Mirror this week claiming that the next series of Doctor Who is going to be split in two. And, you know, whoever wrote it, it looked like they sort of made basically possibly cut and pasted some quotes together from Stephen Moffat and Peter Capaldi and stuff like that. And they're claiming that Peter Capaldi doesn't want to do a full season next series because he wants to be able to have a certain degree of freedom to do projects. However, in today's Guardian, it's just been kiboshed, this rumour, because there's been an article in there where Peter Capaldi, Stephen Moffat and Matt Gatiss are actually having a go at the BBC for showing Doctor Who on a Saturday at 8:30 p.m. They're saying that's an inappropriate time slot, given that it's meant to be for the younger viewers as well. Because by showing at 8:30 p.m. in the UK, it's not ending until around about 9:30 or so.
That's post-watershed for you, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it basically means a lot of the younger kids that would normally watch Doctor Who are missing out. And it's also in the last month or two, the ratings have been down at their lowest ever in terms of the actual overnights, which is not the full story, as we all know. The overnights were down to less than 4 million for the first time last week. But as we all know, it's not the full story, because they've got to factor in, you know, a lot of other things, such as the audience appreciation index and then the iPlayer ratings and stuff like that. But I kind of blame it on the fact that BBC are showing at 8:30 when it's up against X Factor and God knows what else. Tough. You know, I think they need to sort of take it back to 7 o'clock like it was in 2005, and they'll probably get a better reaction from the audience.
Yeah, they should.
Well, that's basically what's been going on. I've got a couple of other stories as well, relating to Kickstarter campaigns and one Indiegogo campaign. Our good friend Robin Dunn, who we actually had on the show about 2-3 years back when he was involved in Sanctuary.
Yes.
He's got a Kickstarter campaign up and running for a comic book he's doing called Rattle Trap, which is a science fiction comic. And it's basically a new comic book, and he's trying to raise money for it. He's looking to try and raise $10,000 to get it going. And it's for a new company that he's got up and running called Underbelly Comics. So, you know, if you're one of the people that pledges regularly on Kickstarter, you know, just type in Rattle Trap in Kickstarter and give it a look. And our other news is former Buffy actress Juliet Landau, who used to play Drissenga. She's also got an Indiegogo campaign up and running, and it's for a new vampire documentary she's making called A Place Among the Undead. And you know, it's gonna feature interviews with the likes of Joss Whedon, Tim Burton, and Gary Oldman, to name but a few. And she's hoping to get that made. So you know, just go over to Indiegogo and type in A Place Among the Undead if you're interested in sort of making a pledge to that.
What I find interesting about that one is that it's actually two films. A Place Among the Undead is about fictional vampirism, and then she's doing a film in conjunction that's called A Place Among the Dead, which is the real vampire fetishist. The real sort of subculture of the people who are acting and living as vampires, which is out there. It's very fringe, but it is out there. And she's making both documentaries together, and marketing the undead one for obvious reasons more heavily, but she's doing both.
Cool, that'd be cool. I mean, I do know that there is a subculture of actual people that are living vampire-type lifestyles. And I've got to say, it's a bit concerning, really, isn't it? You know, with you know, things such as AIDS and HIV running wild.
Yeah,
it's a little bit worrying.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit strange, but as they say, each to their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other news you'd like to discuss?
No, I think that about covers it. I'll be doing my next DC roundup sometime this weekend, and then I'll have
Is there anything from that you'd like to sort of make mention of real quickly?
Let's see. I'm going to bring up the fact that Emma Caulfield is going to be going on to Supergirl.
Cool.
And as an FBI agent, I think it is. I got to go check the source again because it's not a character I'm familiar with. Emma Caulfield of Buffy fame as Demon Anya. She's called Cameron Chase, and she's an FBI agent who, according to the comic books, was originally connected to Supergirl's DEO organization that they're featuring heavily in this version, so it makes sense that they'd be bringing her in. Mm-hmm. And she was originally with the FBI, and her father's been murdered, and so she's driven by that. And she's played by Emma Caulfield. It should be interesting.
Okay, well, I've got one more news story to quickly bring up before we hit the interview. And that is, apparently, the new Jurassic Park film, or shall we say Jurassic World, that came out earlier this year, and apparently broke quite a few box office records, is actually the beginning of a new trilogy. Apparently, one of the execs from the studio actually told Hollywood Reporter yesterday that it's the beginning of a new trilogy. Only thing is, Steven Spielberg and the director who directed it, can't remember his name off the top of my head, can't even enunciate his name, so, because I'm too drunk, but I'm not drunk. But, I'm in denial, that's what it, hang on. But he said, basically, they didn't tell the studio that they were planning a trilogy.
Oh,
so
wow.
So that turned out as a nice little surprise for the studio, especially given that the opening film, Jurassic World, did so well for them. So,
yes.
I think that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Because I've actually recently seen the film and I really enjoyed it.
I haven't yet. I'll probably will at some point.
Well, it didn't quite have the same sort of like scare factor as Jurassic Park, the original Jurassic Park, but it was still a pretty good film. It was sort of like it was pure comic book in a lot of ways, but you know, sort of like it was just sort of like a bit of a thrill ride. It's what you go to the cinema in the summer for, really. But that's a pretty cool news that they're making that there's going to be two more. I just hope that, unlike the original trilogy, it's not a case of diminishing returns in terms of the quality of the films and such.
Yeah, let's hope.
Okay, well, Risa, thanks for joining us. I'm going to run the interview now. It's with Alex Ponovic of iZombie and Continuum fame. So without further ado, here we go. To welcome a very special guest to the show this week. He's known for all sorts of things, ranging from Continuum to iZombie. I'd like to welcome the actor Alex Ponovic to the show. How are you doing, Alex?
Thanks for having me, and I'm doing great.
Oh, it's great having you. I guess the first question I'd like to kick off with is how did you get into acting? What sort of journey led you into the acting world?
Well, it was an interesting journey. I started out as a boxer. I come from three generations of boxers in my family, so I boxed at a very young age and competed like closer to the later ends of my 20s. But I also, as a teenager, played in a heavy metal band. So I was boxing and playing heavy metal through high school and into my 20s. And then after a show one day, a casting director asked if I wanted to audition for a movie, and I thought it would be a good experience, so I did, and I ended up getting the movie, and I really enjoyed the aspect of being creative as an individual as opposed to having, you know, four other guys. I would kind of, you know, some other people may have a different view on how the career wants to go or how the music wants to go, but physically in boxing, I love the orchestrating and creating within the ring, and this was a source that was came by surprise to me that I really enjoyed, that I can tell stories in the same way as I did physically in the ring. So for me, it was really interesting, and I started in stunts. After I got the gig, I came from a small city in Canada called Winnipeg, and there was only one stunt community there. So I became friends with the stunt coordinator, so I was basically on every movie doing a little bit of acting and a lot of stunt fighting or playing that kind of character. And then I really wanted to do more. I wanted to tell more stories. I wanted to be more humanized in telling these stories. So I started to study quite a bit, and I switched from doing stunts into just acting, and just kind of carried on from there.
Wow. So I sounds like you've done quite a lot. I mean, you know, as a musician to myself, I'm kind of taken with the fact that you were in a metal band. What instrument did you play? Were you a drummer by any chance?
No, I was a bass player, so I was the rhythm section.
Ah, right. Yeah, so like I kind of thought you kind of looked like a drummer.
Yeah, because I like to hit.
you know, You know, it's true what they say, though, isn't it? Most drummers are just completely mad.
They're insane. Most of them are insane. I went through a bunch of drummers, and I vouch for their insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got to play the part of Rollings recently, and you did the sixth episode stint on the series Continuum during its fourth series. What attracted you to the role? And for those that maybe haven't caught up with Continuum's fourth season yet, you know, what sort of part does Rollins have to play in it?
Well, what attracted me to the role was Simon Barry, for one, who created the show, who I'm friends with. And by coincidence, my longtime friend of like 13 years, Victor Webster, who plays Carlos on the show, was another thing. And I was a fan of the show. If I didn't know them, I would still be a fan of the show, because I think they just did such an amazing job of storytelling and the creativity and originality that they have on that show. I was a fan regardless of who was a part of it. And so Simon was always saying that there was going to be a part for me. And I always told Simon, I go, listen, if it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm just a fan. And then he offered me the role of Rawlings, and I was ecstatic just to be a part of that. A part of that crew, and most of the crew I was friends with outside of working with them, which is Ryan Robbins and Ty Olson and Eklund and Garfield, Lisa. I was friends with all of them before Simon put the Time Marine together. So I was just fortunate enough to work with great friends and with great creative minds. So that's what really attracted me.
It's a great show as well. I mean, I've been following it, you know, since it began, also since it began, I've actually got to interview Simon Barry and Rachel Nichols as well.
Aren't they lovely? Lovely, aren't they?
They're fantastic people. They're really nice. Yes. But you know, it is a great show. And I've got to admit, the time travel element in the fourth season kind of like threw me for a bit of a loop.
Right, exactly, yeah. And what I really enjoyed from it, because Simon is from Vancouver, Canada, and the show is set in Vancouver, Canada, and it's shot in Vancouver, Canada. So for him to really kind of make a stand and tell this story from, you know, a place of where he's from and also set where he's from, I think it's a testament to what kind of a man he is to set tribute to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that I found quite attractive about the show as well, was the fact that it was shot in Vancouver. I mean, we in the UK know that a lot of the science fiction and fantasy shows are shot either in Vancouver or Toronto, but we've never seen any films or TV series where the locations are actually set in those cities.
Isn't that interesting? I love that he did that. It was very cool.
So, you know, from my point of view as a viewer, I found that pretty cool too.
Yeah.
Looking at your IMDb credits, I actually noticed that you did a little-known film with David Hasselhoff a few years back in a film called The Christmas Consultant. How was that for you, working with the Hoff? Do you have any funny stories from that set?
Oh, man, the only thing I can say is that he is absolutely lovely. He was nothing but generous to everyone on set. He was... there was no prima donna stuff. He was just... He just loved being there, loved working. He's a jokester. We had a good time. I have nothing but wonderful things to say about him. He was above all extremely professional and made everyone feel at ease. I had a great time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's, you know, you see footage of him now, and he's looking good for a guy in his 50s.
Oh my God, he's in great shape. I was in wonder at how much energy he had, and even when we would be working all day, you would get a workout in, and I was like, I got to keep up with this guy. So he's in great shape and great energy.
Mm-hmm. You've done several film projects this year as well, and one of which is called Numb, which from what I've managed to glean about it on IMDb and various sources, it sounds like a bit of a fun caper. What can you tell us about the film and your role in it?
We had our world premiere at the Busan Film Festival, BIFF, and it's quite a big festival, and I went over there. I was there for 36 hours because I had had to come back and work. But it was our first screening. It was our world premiere, and the Asian audience just really took to it and loved the storytelling of this thriller. And we were just, you know, beside ourselves with excitement that the audience really enjoyed it. And it's basically about a couple that's in financial distress trying to get a job that was promised to them and it didn't happen. And then they pick up a couple hitchhikers who Marie Angelopoulos plays from The 100. And I worked with her because I did 5 episodes of The 100, and I just thought she would have been perfect for this film because I also associate produced it, and so I helped cast it, and I thought she would be perfect for it, and she signed on to do it. So we play hitchhikers that they pick up, and we kind of, I always like to say the fifth character or the number one character out of the four of us, because Jamie Bamber from Battlestar Galactica is also a part of it. And I always like to say that the environment, the weather, the cold, the winter is one of the prime characters in the film. And so it's basically about, you know, these four people find coordinates to a hidden gold treasure, and that isn't too far off the main road. So they think they can get it within a couple hours, and weather turns and intentions turn between the four of them, and it really gets to show what people would do when their backs are up against the wall, what their character is like, what their moral value is like, and where they would go to get what they want. And and it's really interesting how some people make decisions in that kind of dire straits.
Sounds like a fantastic character drama.
Yeah, it was probably one of the hardest films I've ever done, because we shot it in the upper parts of British Columbia and long days, and it was. I don't think we could have gotten the performance that we got if we didn't go through that struggle and that temperature. So I'm really proud of the film. I'm proud of our first-time feature filmmaker, Jason Good, who was first time he directed a feature, and the whole production crew, the crew was amazing, just because, you know, they had to lug all the gear and make sure everything's going in the middle of the woods. So I'm extremely, this is one of the most proudest I've been on a project.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to keep an eye out for it when it becomes available here. So, you know,
please do.
Like an interesting film.
I think we'll be doing some film festivals in the UK, so I'll keep you up to date.
That'd be cool. Another film, and this is probably somewhat of a lighter role, is I noticed that you're in Kindergarten Cop 2. I didn't know they were doing a sequel to that. I mean, that's like an old Arnold Schwarzenegger film, right?
Yeah, but actually Schwarzenegger wasn't a part of it, and it was Dolph Lundgren who was playing Schwarzenegger part.
All right. Did you get any cute scenes with the kids in the film?
I wanted some cute scenes with the kids, but I'm the villain in this one.
Oh, man.
I know. Believe me, I really wanted to kind of have some scenes playing around with the kids. That would have been fun.
Maybe you should contact Simon Barry to invent a time machine so you can sort of like manufacture an unusual accident for Dolph Lundgren.
I see what you did there. I see what you did.
Yeah, I love that original. I love the original film Kindergarten Cop. It used to be on in holidays here.
When I got the role, Ian, I was just so ecstatic just to be a part of that little franchise and just to kind of play in that same kind of ballpark as the original. And it was an honor just to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing I've heard about you is I hear you're an MMA fan. So, you know, you and my nephew probably get along. My nephew's currently, he's training to be a paratrooper here in the UK, but he's a big fan of MMA.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends that practice MMA. I come from a boxing background, but I appreciate MMA. One of my best friends is Josh Barnett, who just finished fighting in the UFC. He's one of the second last card, and he won his fight, which we're happy about. But I'm a huge fan of MMA. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any film projects coming up which will allow you to maybe utilize that interest that you have?
No, but there's a few things being kicked around to where we can really utilize the fight genre, but nothing's been solidified yet.
Okay. Well, you know, that'd be cool to see if it happens, because I'm a fan of some of those, you know, movies. One in particular that I really liked was Warrior.
Oh my God, isn't that great?
Yeah, I mean, it's like Tom Hardy, Nick Nolte, and, oh, God, I can't remember the name of the other actor in it, but it's just a fantastic...
I was fortunate enough to work with Tom Hardy right after he shot that, because I did a film called This Means War with him. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me about all the training that he did and how he got into fight shape and fighter shape for it. And so I got a little bit of behind the scenes of what he did, and he's one of my favorite actors, period. I think he's one of the most phenomenal actors of our generation, and he was phenomenal in that.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's an awesome talent. I mean, another great film he did was Bronson, which was
Bronson was the one that kind of shot him to stardom, I think. Like he was phenomenal in that. Have you seen him in Locke?
Not yet, no.
You have to watch Locke. Locke, if there's an actor, I don't know any other actor that can hold a movie together for 90 minutes where he's just in a car on a phone. That's compelling if you can keep an audience with just that. And he did. He's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You got to watch that one.
I'll put it on my list. It's amazing. As you say, he came up in Bronson, but before that, he did the Star Trek Nemesis film, which sadly bombed. So
that's right.
It's amazing he's managed to sort of like salvage a career out of that.
Very, very much so. But he didn't bomb in that film. I thought he was great. That's the one thing you take away from that Star Trek film is how great he was in it.
Oh, he's superb in that. And, I remember song like after that, didn't do too well. And he came back here to England and he did a few TV dramas. He was in one called Codex, which was a miniseries. And he also, he played Bill Sykes in the BBC production of Oliver as well, Oliver Twist. So.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, and he was a pretty convincing Bill Sykes in that.
That's amazing.
So I've kind of followed his career pretty much most of the way back, I've
right.
been with him, sort of thing. Anyway, getting on to another subject, as well as TV and movie work, you've also lent your voice to video games such as Gears of War. How do you find voicing characters to games versus sort of like doing the more traditional television and movie stuff?
Honestly, it's just fun. It's just a different medium of being of telling a story. So I just love the aspect of emotion capture of it. Of telling that story and then having fans just, being a part of it and watching the cinematic of how Gears of War is being done and knowing that you're a part of it in some way. I just love that side of storytelling too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I often watch the documentary footage of these things, of the actors using in the booth with a headset on and the scripts in front and they're reading the lines and they're becoming really, really animated. And I saw that, see that, and I think these guys must be having a ball.
Oh, it's nothing more than just a blast, always. And especially when you get along with everyone that you're working with, it's not even work, it's just everyone having a blast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Earlier in the year, you got yourself a bit of a plum role in the TV drama iZombie, which I believe is being picked up for a second series. Will you be returning to that?
Yeah, well, no, they're actually starting, tonight is the premiere in Canada of the second season, and I am not a part of the second season. I had a great run with those guys, and they're nothing but wonderful people. Like, we just hung out the other weekend, it was great. They're good friends, but I'm doing other things right now, so it's great.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other projects you've got coming up that you'd like to sort of give special mention to?
Well, I get the clearance today of when I can actually talk about it, but it's a massive franchise feature that I'm really excited to be a part of, but unfortunately, I can't quite say it yet. I wish I could. I signed a non-disclosure, so I got to wait till they give me the okay.
Yeah, those NDAs are a pain in the butt. I've even had to sign a couple of them.
I know.
I've had to sign a couple of those. Is one as we sometimes even get press releases about things which are embargoed until midnight of such and such a day. It's kind of like working for the Secret Service but without any weapons.
True. It's true. But I got to hold off.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Alex, it's been brilliant speaking to you, and the best of luck with NUM and everything else.
Ian, thanks for taking the time, man. I really appreciate it. And thanks for supporting actors and film in general. It makes us want to work more.
Well, you know, sort of like the more good work that comes out, the more we want to sort of keep writing about it. So it's kind of like it's a reciprocal thing.
Well, I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Alex. It's been great having you on the show. And again, best of luck with the with NUM and everything else that you got coming up, including the Uber Top Secret thing.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Cheers, mate. Bye. And that's about all we have time for this week. I'd like to thank Alex Pornovich for taking time out to speak to us. I'd also like to thank Raisa for helping us go through the news and everything. We'll be back again with another show next week where we're going to be talking to Beatrice Stephanie Bennett, who's currently involved in two great shows, one called Romeo Station, which is an espionage TV series, and she's also going to be involved in the TV series Shadow Hunters, which is kind of like a science fiction fantasy series involving angels, demons, and all sorts of other nasties. So we'll be speaking with Stephanie Bennett next week on the show. So keep your ears out for that. But for now, that's all we've got time for. So it's goodbye for this week. Bye.